Hey, I'm Adam Carolla.
I'm Dr. Drew.
And we are here to ask you to do us a little favor. If you like what you hear, share it with a friend.
Nice. Keep the pirate ship afloat, right?
Yeah, well, that's the only advertising we got. But it's the best kind.
It is.
Word of mouth.
It is.
Whose mouth?
Yours. Not yours, theirs.
Theirs.
Theirs, yes.
That's right. Thank you in advance for telling a friend, and enjoy the show.
This is Carolla Digital. Recorded live at Carolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Yeah, get it on, baby. Not to get it on, no choice, but I'm going to get on. I'm Adam Carolla. That is Dr. Drew, Gary Anthony Williams. My buddy, we used to I know him from the old preschool my kids used to go to. He's been on the show before. Jordan Black's going to be in here as well. They got themselves a little podcast. We'll talk to them in a couple of few. First, we got your phone calls and some lively conversation. Do we have a phone call? That's the question I have.
I have something I wanted to talk to you about.
Go ahead.
So we were up... So tonight we're in Rhode Island, right? We're at the Newport Yacht Center. Please join us there.
Mm, I practically grew up in a yacht center. My dad with that silk ascot.
I see him in his little
skipper hat.
Skipper hat, yeah, little
blue blazer,
navy, yeah,
blue white slacks.
Yeah, I see it. I see it.
He had, remember very distinctly, he had a horseshoe, but it had an extended stick on it and a horse's head.
Wow.
And I used that to put those loafers on. I think they were kid.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
kid
yeah.
was the leather.
You know, my wife was reading that Taco Bell material, and she was open to a page where you have the picture of you, your parents, your grandma, and your sister. And I was like, let me see that picture. Looked like they'd come over in a covered wagon or something, your parents. They looked like, you know, it's like American Gothic. Like
oh, you think the wagon was covered? That was an open wagon.
Yeah. They, I mean, they really look so depressed. It really was like, you know, the painting American Gothic. There might be that.
I don't have to. Gary Anthony Williams will straighten you out, but you see my white privilege, right?
Oh, yeah, I've suffered nothing but.
Right.
Nothing but.
Nothing but. Yeah, my parents were incredibly depressed, and as I kid about, but I'm not kidding when I say that's what they looked like when the camera was out. Imagine when the camera went back into the case, what they looked like.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, it's an interesting question, really, because, again, thinking of the painting American Gothic, did people – that's just what they look like, the camera?
I was posing for a painting? I smiled in the picture.
Yeah.
No, people smiled back then. They had the term, say cheese.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the thing – that
very old country looking, you know what I mean?
It's just not a show unless Drew.
I know
that something goes off. I have carpet swatches for you everywhere, Drew.
One.
All right. Other people absorb your swatches.
Thank you.
Put that on it.
But
make it your business, would you please? Just make it your business. The thing that you should not do to your kids is be openly depressed and do things in front of them that upset them. Now,
yes, that's a good rule of thumb.
Yeah. Well, no, what I'm saying is there's going to be moments where daddy's driving the car, somebody cuts off daddy, and daddy yells, "You son of a bitch." But that doesn't really involve them, and it's not an emotional thing. But watching daddy and mommy fight, that's very upsetting. And seeing mommy cry and daddy yell and that kind of stuff. But the low-grade depression, but the never-ending. I mean, it was just a sort of nonstop depression at my house. It was the worst environment in the world. I would rather have some highs and lows. This was just a sort of middle low and nonstop. No peaks, no real valleys, just one kind of low-grade, just...
Yeah.
And that
kids need a little stimulation for their brain to grow. emotionally.
Yes, yes. I think that, that would have helped a lot. So that's who they were. And you know, you don't believe me. Yeah, you look at that picture and they
were. Well, there's a couple of pictures. Well, one we've studied here on this podcast, which is the one that at that barbecue where they were, where they, someone jumps up to take a picture. But this was the five of you lined up. And it really looked like a picture from the old country, like when you'd have to hold a pose for a long period of time, and there'd be a flash of, you know, because there was, everyone was expressionless.
Yeah, they were dead inside, so that was great.
You know which picture I'm talking about?
Yeah,
yeah.
There was a us up on the porch.
Yes.
Yeah. You want to know a funny story about that? Is now. Kim is the, she's an adult now. She's the cute blonde girl in that picture. When I say cute, I mean, you know, 10 years old. But the family, you know, my family, my step-grandfather, which is the only grandfather I've known. So my dad's dad died when my dad was 18 or 19. And then my biological grandfather, I never knew, a sort of abusive alcoholic, whatever, short order cook. I don't remember what happened. No one knows what
happened.
That was
your mom's dad.
That was my mom's dad. Yeah. And then there's my step grandfather, who then had his nephew, and that was Gabi. And then he adopted two kids. So these were like my step adopted cousins or
the
something.
Hell?
Oh, that was as close as the Corolla's got to family. Everything was an adopt, you know, second.
But that means your grandmother had to have kids around. How did she put up with that?
My grandmother? No, my grandmother didn't have to have kids around.
What they said, your grandfather, step-grandfather.
Step-grandfather's nephew, as an adult, adopted.
Kids. I see.
Okay. Adopted those kids.
Got it.
So later on.
Yeah, again, it didn't make sense. Now it's back in focus.
And show people sort of, I marvel at this with my buddy Kevin Hench all the time. When people are insanely casual about viewing other people's works, who they grew up with or who they have an association with or something like that. Kevin Hench, my writing partner, handed off our movie, The Hammer, to a guy who's like in a soccer league or something. It's 89 minutes. And it's like the guy's never watched it, you know, and it like comes up in conversation now. And it was just never. And we always marvel the fact that you do know you're going to see this guy on Sunday.
Right.
Like, don't you feel some obligation to go, hey, it popped in the disc. Hey, Prince, there. You know, even if it's just bullshit, that's something. Oh, look at that there. You know, it's just like, never bring it up again. And Hench will bring it up on occasion. And he's like, yeah, check that out. And it's weird, but Thanksgiving, it's at my sister's, and
you're talking about recently.
Yeah, recently, yeah. And I ran into the little girl who's in that picture.
Oh,
who's
wow.
Now, she's a woman with family, kids, and everything, and a nice husband. She's very nice, and she said, "Yay, the book." I said, "Yeah, the book." She said, "Yes, yeah, somebody told me there was a picture of me in that book, you know, on the front porch there," and I said, yeah, there is. It's all the whole family, your dad, your brother, your mom. They're all in the picture, too. Yeah, no, I went and looked it up. I somebody told me about it, and I didn't even know about that picture.
Somebody was concerned.
She said, no. She said, I didn't even know about it, and I didn't have that picture. And then I went online, and I went to Amazon, and she said, you know, you go to Amazon, you can read quite a few pages on an Amazon, just, you know, going on the sample page, you know, on the website. And she said, that's been pretty good stuff in there. A lot of, you know, I was able to read some really good stuff. And I was like, but
you want to buy the book?
You're on Amazon. You can get it used for $7.85.
Well, she was infected with the coronavirus, seems like.
But it's a picture of you in the book. Don't you?
You'd probably get it used for 31 cents.
What is the, where, at what point do you squeeze the trigger? Like, my point is, first off, are there volumes of books with you in it? Pictures of you in it? Like, don't, isn't that just sort of a mandatory thing? Like, there's a picture, I mean, not, don't do it for me, but wouldn't you, and then there's the whole, there's the other 310 pages you may
I want to take a look at that.
Maybe you're mentioned in there. I don't know. You should buy that book. But here's the other thing that's weird. Now, I'll never understand how this works. I'm the only, at this point, you're the only one in this room that knows you didn't buy the book. Now, I am going to know, once you get into detail about going to Amazon and reading, your reaction should be two things. Oh, hey, love the book. Left it home. I was going to bring it along, get your autograph. Or, you got a book out? Not, I went to Amazon, stared at it for a good long time. And there's almost
an epidemic now of people not appreciating the impact they have on other people. They have no insight, like zero sense of, maybe I ought to just think about this. Maybe he's going to have a reaction. Or when you do have a reaction, they seem to not receive the information.
The good news is I'm amused now.
No, I know. I understand you don't have a huge, you're not a big dog in the fight. But it's still a weird thing that people don't like think through how somebody's going to feel about the things they say and do. And it just doesn't happen anymore.
Well, it's weird. It's nothing pejorative. It's not your book sucked. It's just there's a picture of me in your book, and I'm still not buying it.
Yeah.
I knew the Corollas had a commitment to this, but
well,
I didn't know
she's
extended.
She's been affected by the Corollas, yeah.
I guess so.
But, Dick, I want to talk about something else. Mm. As I said, we were going to be in Rhode Island tonight, and I was in Carmel last week and with you.
Mm-hmm.
And, there's the theater right there from Chris Maxipata's Fish Eye Lens, evidently.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't want to catch us in this picture at all.
Oh, but, shut up.
So it's a beautiful theater, though. It looks like a church. Look at that thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we flew up, a little United Express, SkyWest. Mm-hmm. And on the way back, flight's 2 hours late. I understand. Whatever.
Flight's 2 hours late.
Yeah. So whatever. I understand. Flying, whatever. Get on the plane. First of all, in the waiting room where people have been sitting for 3 hours because it's 2 hours late, it's a sauna. It's incredibly hot. And all right. But that's, difficult. So you get out in the tarmac. It's like, oh, thank God. Back in the plane, it's 85 degrees in the plane. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all literally, everyone on this aircraft, it's a regional jet, everyone is fanning themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the flight attendant starts making fun of people. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I see you guys with your waving your flags at me. You keep on going. And we're like, no, it's like 90 degrees in here. If there are any elderly people in this plane, it's going to be a problem.
What did she mean?
Oh, you're doing that on my behalf. I see you fanning yourselves. I get you're hot.
Uh-huh. Right, right.
You suck it up, everybody.
Right, right, right.
So finally, we're getting ready to take off. We've sat on the plane for about 30 minutes like this, and she finally gets on the horn with the captain and goes, hey, would you turn the air in here? I'm a couple feet away from her. And now she starts laughing, joking with the pilot, and hangs up after just saying, turn the air on.
Right.
And she goes again, like, I see you waving, and we're gonna fire it up now, and zero air coming out of the little funnels above your head.
Right.
Zero now. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's 85, 90 degrees. And I'm thinking, this is a major malfunction of this aircraft right now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You want to tell the pilot that there's zero? We're like, hey, there's zero air coming out. Zero.
Right.
The plane's not working right. She goes, when we get to altitude, just relax. When we get up to the altitude, it will cool off. This is the best we can do.
Mm-hmm.
Get to altitude. Now it's 95 degrees.
Wow.
It's really hot in this area. I mean, really, I thought, is there a fire on board here or something?
Mm-hmm.
Will not notify the pilot. Refuses to tell the pilot that it's – and now everyone in the aircraft is like panting. And like,
yeah.
And at the end, she had the temerity to go, hey, be sure to download the United app. And somebody screamed out, where's the air conditioning app? Screaming
right.
at it.
Right.
You know, and then the pilot came out. They kind of come out of the cockpit of the flight deck afterwards and kind of greet everybody. The pilot came out of the flight deck. I was like, oh, my God. Like, what the hell? He was, like, shocked.
Yeah.
Like, what's going on here?
Right.
Here's my thinking. Now, first of all, the aircraft had a major malfunction. So the whole way I'm thinking, what the fuck else is up with this aircraft?
I mean, right.
Forget the fact. Secondly, I'm thinking as a physician, this is Carmel, man. There's a lot of old people up here. If there's an old person on this craft, they're not going to make it to landing. There's going to be a problem before
right.
we get down. Thirdly, This is the reason I bring it up. I felt like it was my responsibility to talk. Not everyone has a microphone and a podcast to talk about this shit or a Twitter feed where there's lots of people. Like, I think we have to speak. It's not for me And this may sound sanctimonious, but I feel like we kind of have an obligation to use this microphone a little bit sometimes to go, hey, fuckwads. Not everyone in that aircraft had a microphone, so you're not going to hear about it. I got one. You're going to hear about it. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
On behalf of everyone in their aircraft. But there were people like, I was back at baggage camp. People were like, holy shit, can you believe? I'm like, people are like, oh, what the fuck? And I'm like, I got to talk about this. I have to bring it up.
I've had a lot. And Gary and Jordan are both here, so we'll break in a second and bring them in. I've had it happen a lot where I've dealt with people in a business, and I've went, here's what I need, and they went, yeah, okay. And then I went, like, no, I'm telling you what I want because I want you to go do it. Like, they just sort of hear you and kind of move on, like, all right, everyone in this plane is sweltering. Somebody asked you to talk to the pilot. We're telling you to do it. We're not really asking you to do it. It's not even just
because we're uncomfortable. It's because I'm concerned that there's something wrong with this aircraft. The pilot might need to know about that.
I will give you a quick little example before we go to break. I flew to Denver for the day to just do something for the day. And I flew out DC something, and when we were getting ready to land in Denver, I was sitting in the middle of the plane, right sort of near the wing, but right on top of the landing gear. And as we were getting ready to come down and land, as the landing gear opened, it popped, like it made a poop. Sometimes they get hung up a little bit, yeah, and then when they get freed up, it makes a pop.
Yeah.
And every person – now, if you're sitting in the front of the plane, you didn't really react to it.
Yeah.
And if you're sitting in the back, you didn't. But everyone in the middle was a visible a gasp.
Yeah.
Like everyone went, because it was a loud pop that sounded like a fucking aileron sheared off or something. It was just pop. And everyone went, huh. And the stewardess was just standing at the end there doing the, you know, we're preparing to land now, so please. And then everyone went, huh? And then she just kept with her spiel. And I was probably the only person that was going hop on literally the same plane and fly back that afternoon. And I got on the same plane to fly back, and I recognized it was the same plane I was flying back. And so this time, because I'm wired the way I'm wired, I knew to prepare myself for this big pop. Even when it did pop, I still did jump a little because you're not sure exactly when the landing gear is being deployed.
Yeah.
And everyone around me did the
again.
And I just thought, this cunt sees this five times a day and never says shit.
Yeah. Prepare for this.
She could say the landing gear's a little sticky, make some noise. So those in the center aisle are going to hear a little pop. Then never mind. Never your little mind about it. It'll be fine. Now, she just sat there and watched everyone go, and she's flying back and forth all day, every day.
But don't you feel like I told people that I was flying, like, I will speak on our behalf publicly about this.
Yes.
You feel really kind of responsible to get up and go, hey.
Yes.
Hey, United, come on. Pay attention. We've been flying with you for 20 years.
Look, this is the greatest. This really, in terms of the terrorists winning, this is their greatest victory. Everyone in the plane gets to be a cunt to the customer, and they don't give a shit anymore because it's all safety oriented now, and there's no service oriented anything. And I've had a million people just be super shitty with me. As you know, I poured myself some champagne once. What happened is this fucking, the bar was set right in the front of it was like the cart with the champagne and the orange juice on, just set right against the front, like this when you used to fly the wide bodies.
Yep.
And I had a first class ticket, and she's like helping someone with their luggage, you know, and I'm just like sitting there, and I just said, well, fuck it. I leaned forward, grabbed the flute, and poured myself. They're going to offer you champagne or orange juice.
They're
just not. They're not.
So what?
They wouldn't offer it to me because they were doing something else. And I got the, sir, this isn't a self-serve bar. And I just looked there and I said, first class.
Let it be at that.
I'm fucking in first class. Can I fucking not get yelled at for pouring myself a fucking glass of champagne? I didn't bust it over the counter and yell, come on, who wants some? I fucking poured it in a cup. I know she was shamed because she wasn't able to do her job, but I got to tell you. I mean, I could tell you a story about Alaskan Airlines, but I don't think you'd believe me. I honestly don't think you'd believe me. I mean, like, I had a first-class flight to Seattle, and everyone had their shit in my storage bin above my head, so I had to check it. I had a first-class flight, but I had to check my one carry-on bag, just a one bag, check it, because everyone had put their shit above my shit, my seat. And when I checked it, they just gave me the, here it is, pick it up at baggage. And they gave me the receipt.
Yeah.
And other guys I flew with checked something. So when we got off the plane, we all just walked over to the baggage carousel and we sat there. Uh-oh. And I sat there for half an hour.
You're supposed to be on this flight on the jetway.
Right, except for she didn't say anything, number one. And number two, I'm off the plane first because I'm in first class. So the bag ain't waiting for me. I'm past the bag. And then I get down and I sit there for half an hour. And it doesn't show up. So I go to the helpful guy behind the counter and I say, I checked a bag on this flight. And he looks at it looked at the ticket stub and he said, this is a gate check.
Yeah.
And I said, they never said anything. Well, sir, most of our customers know that the green color designates.
No. And I said,
does it say gate check anywhere on the stub?
Yeah.
No. But most our customers know the green signifies. So how would I inherently know what color was baggage check or gate check? And it doesn't say anything on the stub. It should say gate check on the stub. And the person didn't tell me anything. Mm. So I said, what are we going to do? I said, well, what are we going to do? And he said, do you have your boarding pass? And I said, no. And he said, you don't have your boarding pass? And I said, the flight's over. Do you think I collect and trade? Just fucking print out from the hotel? No, I don't have my boarding. So no boarding pass? No boarding pass. I said, well, can you call somebody up at the gate and just tell them to bring the bag down here? No. I said, well, what are we going to do? I'll print you a temporary boarding pass. And then what? Go get in security. Go get in the end of the long security line with my temporary boarding pass. Not getting on a flight.
And
you have to take a fucking train in the Seattle area, like an underground tunnel thing, tram. And then I went to the top, and I went to the gate, and there was nobody there.
It's locked.
Yeah.
Door shut.
And then I went to the neighboring gate, and I said, excuse me, this gate over here, did anyone throw any luggage? And then I looked over the counter, and there was my bag sitting. Now, they could have fucking thrown it on a tram or given it to anyone and walked it down there. And then I said, that's my bag. And then she gave the speech once again. Most of our customers understand. And I said, listen to me, sweetheart. Does it say anywhere on this ticket that it's a gate check? And then number two, why would I inherently think this then?
Not only that, if I had any hint that this was in fact where my bag was supposed to be, I'm a maniac and run to baggage claim, ignoring my bag because
this whole thing started Alaskan Airlines because I had a first class ticket, but all the baggage space above my seat was filled with other people's shit. That's where this began. And that asshole behind the counter could have picked up the phone, called the fucking gate and told him to run the bag over.
Yep.
Instead, temporary boarding pass, go get back in line.
You want to know responsive business? Stamps.com.
Oh, man.
You'll never be unhappy with these guys. We all mail. We all ship. We all don't like so much going to the post office and waiting in line. Well, you don't have to go anymore because at Stamps.com, you can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package right from your own computer. You don't have to ever go to the post office again if you don't want to, because you can do anything that you can do at the post office now at your home without leasing an expensive postage meter, without any fancy equipment, just right off your computer. It's a special no-risk trial and $110 bonus. Includes a digital scale, again, that hooks right into your computer so you can print out exactly what the right postage will be for anything you want to send, and $55 of free postage. Only if you enter ADS, so go to stamps.com now, click the microphone at the top of the homepage, type in ADS. I don't know how they give you the $55 of.
I don't know how it works.
That's like $55. It just happened to be in the form of stamps. All right, that's stamps.com, promo code ADS.
All right, Gary Anthony Williams is here. Jordan Black is here. Ryan, I just feel bad because you've been on hold for 2 hours. I'm going to basically ignore you because we have our guests here. You live with your parents. You want advice if it's time to move out. If you're asking if it's time to move out, it's time to move out.
Yes.
No, no. My question is, you know, if you guys, when Adam, I know you mentioned sometimes that when you were younger, if you could go back, or if you could go back and give your younger self some advice, what would it be? My parents basically, you know, I've been lucky enough to live at home and just pay off school and not take any student loans. My parents, you know, they'd rather me just stay, focus on school, finish, get my degree, and then go from there. You know, move out once I've graduated if I'm ready for that. Or, you know, they're being nice about it. So I'm wondering, what would you guys do? Focus on school or just...
Let me ask you this. Would it be gay if you went back to a young version of yourself and gave yourself a blowjob? Would that
no,
be gay?
I would. Yeah, it would be gay.
It would?
It'd be weird.
It'll be weird, but would it be gay? Because guys who can suck their own dick do that. That's not gay. This is just a older version of you giving a seasoned blowjob to a younger, more enthusiastic version of you.
Are you feeling helped, Ryan? Is this helping you?
I'm just curious. Why does everything have to be advice? Why can't it take a turn for the sexual? You know, with yourself, with the younger version of yourself.
I don't know.
It's like what
weird.
Liberace did.
I agree.
You know what I mean? It was like Liberace did that, kind of.
But he wasn't himself doing it. But
he looked like
himself.
Him.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Ryan?
Yeah, Ryan, you know, these are...
Move out.
Yeah, want to get some on-campus housing cheap, and, you know, it shouldn't... Or maybe you could work during the summer and pay for that. I understand they want you to focus on your studies, but why not have a college experience in addition to focusing on your studies? Part of being in college is learning to live away.
Jordan Black, Gary Anthony Williams, they're out there. We'll talk to them in here next.
Hi, folks. I'm Larry Miller, but in a way, aren't we all? And this week, on This Week with Larry Miller, I answer one of the most important questions of all time. How is a man supposed to feel when one of his sons joins the Marines? I can tell you that because it's me. Listen to us through iTunes or the Adam Carolla app, and we'll see you here.
Yeah, back with Gary Anthony Williams and Jordan Black, Blackout Television, all African-American improv show available on iTunes and the website, blackouttelevision.com. Also, Jordan Black's Twitter is at @FakeJordanBlack, and Gary Anthony's is at L.A. Comedy Shorts. He runs the L.A. Comedy Festival. Great to see you guys. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
I got to tell you, there is an Asian. We did involve an Asian in this thing.
There is an Asian person.
But she's like the Black of the Asian world. Mm-hmm. We made sure to do that at least.
Yeah, they shun her. She knows no martial arts.
Yeah, she's almost Filipino as far as they're concerned.
We got a Filipino.
Every podcast needs one.
Well, he knows that Filipinos are the... You guys are the Blacks of the Asian.
Well, you know, the thing is, if you have a Mexican-sounding name, but you look Asian, then you're Filipino.
And you're a nurse.
For sure.
What are the Blacks
vicious,
of the Asians?
Vicious nurse.
The Blacks... The Filipinos?
Filipinos. Yeah.
It is. Oh, totally. Where's Koreans work in this?
They're not nearly as black as Filipinos.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They're probably the
Mexican. Oh, yeah. Filipinos. Well, there's a Filipino black-eyed pea. So, like, that's super black. Like, he's a rapper and he's legit.
Oh, yeah. So I would have the Koreans as, I'm trying to think.
I think
that,
Korean, you got to go Mexican.
Yeah. Okay. Or Puerto Rican.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the hierarchy must be Japanese are, like, the best. Like, they're the closest to, like, white people. That's Japanese. Mm-hmm. They're cool.
Yeah.
And then after that, probably, like, what? Like,
hold on. I'm drawing.
Well, you got to go Chinese.
I'm drawing a pyramid.
Okay, I would think Chinese, too.
Yeah. But
they're communists, so that, you know, in this country, they
hate more.
Yeah,
the thing is, Chinese, you know, they're taking over business. So
that's
true. The Japanese and Chinese are tied right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the Chinese are scary, though. They are still scary.
Yeah, scary people. Yeah. I say that in a loving way, because I would like to make love to the Chinese, but still, it's a scary love making.
Yeah, no, I feel like there's going to be a Lee Press-On nail left in your cornea. You know, if you get out of line, you got to take it slow at the beginning with the Chinese ladies. You guys, by the way, Shadow Stevens, legendary broadcaster and, I don't know, host and everything else. Shadow Stevens
a legend.
Is floating
the
around.
The voice
it.
Of...
How did he get involved with this? Is it because his last name is Shadow?
Yeah, we dark enough. Forever, we thought he was black.
I don't know if America knows this, and this might cost Shadow a lot of jobs. But Shadow has a black wife.
Did it.
I know you guys aren't going to invite him to any of the parties.
Any of the white parties.
Can't make any jokes.
Oh, you know what? We can only, there's no plus ones, Shadow. So,
hey.
Gary and I do a show at the Groundlings Theater here in Los Angeles called The Black Version. Mm-hmm. And it's an all black cast. Shadow came and saw the show and fell in love with the cast and said, hey, why don't you guys, let's do some kind
Look,
of podcast.
I don't think this is racist, but if you're married to a black person right. and you're white, whether you're male or female, we need to fit you with a windbreaker because, you know, I could come up and go, you know, those people. And you're married. You know, she's out in the car. You know what, I'm saying?
That's the thing. They're like our ultimate spies. People like Shadow. Mm. They're like, hey, here's what the rest of the white folks are saying.
Oh, he reports.
He's got the inside scoop.
He comes back and reports. Yeah.
He's told us nothing, though. He holds it very close
He's
to
like,
the
everything's fine. Everything's
he may be
fine.
A counter spy.
Oh, interesting.
He tells Adam shit.
He wants to stir things up.
So, oh, he might be.
Gary, how's the shorts? When is the festival? We'll throw that
it's
out
not
there,
till like
too.
Next April or May. So it's good, man. And thank you for people who don't know. You guys supplied us with some mangria for everybody, and we donated money towards the towards cancer for it. So it was all great, man. Thank you for that.
Why are you giving money to support cancer? We're trying to defeat cancer,
not,
Gary.
Not us. Not us.
No, you just love themselves some cancer. Yeah. So, Jordan, what is your background? Where do you come from?
I grew up in a small town called Kankakee, Illinois. And then, you know, so that's the beginning and the end of that story because there's nothing else to tell. No offense to Kankakee. It's just a very small town.
Yeah, we've been through where DeKalb.
Yeah,
is that Northern Illinois?
I've been to Decatur.
And, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are all
Peoria,
signs on freeways trying to get out of Kankakee. As
I had a lovely conversation with the good people of DeKalb when the 85th one told me that barbed wire was invented here.
First person you meet, and the next 85 people you meet mention that. And
well, first off,
thing, barbed wire.
Listen, it's like when a chick goes, look, there've been many great female inventors. Do you know that a female invented whiteout? Do you know that a female?
Right.
And you're like, baby, if that's all you got, don't right. say, any, don't say right. anything.
You can't
come up with space shuttle or some shit like that.
But before computers, whiteout was impressive.
It was, but it's still just taking white shit and putting it. Whoever invented paint or gesso invented whiteout. You put it in a smaller bottle.
So is the barbed wire and?
Oh, so barbed wire and Cindy Crawford.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. A lot of pride.
And after about 25 of those, I said, look, I don't want to offend you, but first off, barbs and wire existed. You guys just put them together. And I do think they would have found their way together at some point by some rancher.
Well,
I'll
say this about Kankakee. We did invent ice cream, but you can go to the very first Dairy Queen there.
Oh, so,
the very first one.
But the
in
point
the
is,
country or in Kankakee?
In Kankakee, the very first.
No, the very first one in the country,
which would be the same.
Ever. Yeah, true. That was a stupid question.
It's an American business.
It's an American institution.
Stupid question. Dude.
I don't even know that
if it was a joke or not.
No, it's the first fucking Dairy Queen in the country.
Jordan don't joke about. He'll joke about a lot of things.
Almost everything.
Not about soft swirl.
No, not about any treats.
I said, but that Dairy Queen is still in Kankakee, right?
Yes, it's still there.
You're right. Cindy Crawford.
And no one tells you that, though. I read that on Wikipedia, and I was mad. Like, I went to that Dairy Queen on a school field trip. Like, it's a small town. A school field trip to Dairy Queen. Like, the teacher didn't even mention, by the way, kids, this is the very first. I would have taken a lot of pride in that.
Sure. But, well, DeKalb evidently is
taking
pride in its stuff.
I said, look, where does Cindy Crawford live now? Does she live in DeKalb or she live in Malibu? Mm-hmm. And if the answer is not DeKalb, then you need to shut up. Because anyone can be born anywhere. I mean, that's essentially what this country is. Everyone's born somewhere else, and then they moved here. And when they got here, they're born in DeKalb, and then they moved to Malibu.
I was down in Palm Beach Gardens. But they invented old people down there. But they claim, near there, they claim, oh, this is where the Williams sisters are from. Mm-hmm. And then here in the hood, they it's claim Compton. The Williams sisters are from there.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's that same thing.
People,
like, the Williams sisters
people you can do a sort of double Jimmy Kimmel does it because Jimmy was born in Brooklyn and lived to Brooklyn, I think it was about 8. Mm. And then he moved to Vegas. Mm-hmm. And there's a weird age where if you're potentially born in Brooklyn and you move when you're 18 months, you can't
you're
claim
not from Brooklyn.
You're not from Brooklyn. But 8 or 9 is this weird right. over under, so he gets to be from
He's
Vegas.
Got a best friend from when he was 8 that he left
right.
in Brooklyn.
Vegas so. And Brooklyn both get to claim him, and maybe Serena and Venus are that way as well. You know what I miss? I miss the boxing or wrestling announcer explaining that the guy's by way of.
Yeah.
Right.
He's fighting out of Henderson, Nevada now, but he's
by way of.
I even miss them saying from parts unknown. That's what I miss. And I
like
that's what I want to be.
Yeah.
Where are you from? Parts unknown.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. We should go back to that.
I'll tell you something that I miss, too. It just struck me when the great Joe Frazier, Smoking Joe Frazier, passed away. I think it was not too long ago, about 8-9 months ago. I think it's been less than a year. But son of a sharecropper. And I thought, now we're going to get son of a dental hygienist.
Yeah, no.
You know what I mean? Like,
this
computer
not cool,
tech, you know?
Nothing.
Son of a sharecropper sounds pretty fucking
because
good.
Because you know you suffered to get here.
Yeah.
I am a son of a sharecropper.
Are you?
Yes, I am.
And a moonshine.
And a moonshine runner, too. I was just telling them that.
Really?
Yeah, my dad ran moonshine, yeah.
How does that work, and why is there still moonshine?
Well, even now, I don't want to say the family name, but if you go down to where I live, near Fayetteville, Georgia, there's still a family who makes moonshine down there.
I know. I see all those, reality shows, but I don't get it. Like, I've seen,
there's no liquor stores in the area?
Well, they would explain to you that this is a dry county or something, but I don't know how it works. But how did it work with your family?
Well, that used to be a dry – where I was from was a dry county.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know exactly how it worked, but I do remember when I was about 7 or 8, he drew out plans to show me how to make a still. He showed me how to make wine when I was really young. So that was what he did forever, man, until the – cops cracked down on them. But most of them were black. The runners were black down there.
Were they – it's weird because then all the white guys got into NASCAR. And
the
that
black
was
guys
the,
did.
I mean, there was Willie T. Ribbs. That's a real name. Yeah. Everyone thinks I'm making that up. I wish I was that good. I'm not. Willie was a great racer, and everyone laughs when I bring his name
up.
Well,
if you make up that name, people go, oh, that's a joke.
Yeah,
that's
you're like,
and it's not even a good
over
one.
The top.
Willie T. Ribbs and Dick Trickle were going at it, and there was like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, that's just a sickness, Dick Trickle.
So your family ran Shine.
Well, before I came along, yeah, I'm one of the youngest of 10 kids he had, him and my mama.
And so what was that like then? And he was a sharecropper.
He was a share. Yeah, that also.
What is the actual definition of a sharecropper?
That would be somebody who has part of a big white man's land.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was there. I guess you could be one with Dave Chappelle now because he owns a lot of land and farms.
I'd like to be a white sharecropper
on
Dave's place.
Yeah. he's looking for white sharecroppers. Like,
what's he growing? We know what Dave's growing, actually.
I need 40 acres and a skinny blonde bitch. Sorry. So, sharecropper.
Yeah. So, which you
what
have
were,
accused
what were
me of.
What were you making?
Well, no, they were growing. They were growing. He was growing crops there. So, but you had to pay the guy for the land that you were on, and then
you rented that plot of land.
Basically rented that plot of land.
So this is like, it's like when somebody gets a salon and they rent a chair out.
Yeah.
And you go, all right, I'll rent this chair at this salon, and then you give them some of the money and you keep some of the money.
And whether your crops come in or not, you got to pay me on Friday.
Right.
Right.
And they were always talking about, oh, yeah, that's when we lived on old man's this place, old man Ponder's place, old man's blah's place. It was always old man.
What was the, it's the sharecropping owner. It's not a young gay man's sport.
No.
No.
Not, young gay, this guy. That's old man.
Old man Ponder.
Right. So what was he growing?
What, my daddy? Well,
yeah.
Probably what he was still growing when I was growing up. Like, we grew all our own stuff, which was turnips. Corn. I ain't gonna say watermelon because that shit sound racist.
But was there a lot of watermelon?
A lot
of watermelon.
As far as I could see.
and then what was he using for his moonshine?
Well, I have no idea. I don't know what they were using. I guess mostly.
I guess
corn.
Right? Yeah,
it's corn.
Yeah. But he taught you how to make wine.
Yeah, and I can still make wine. I still. In fact, I made my first batch. I made screwed up this apartment I used to live in.
Oh, they blow, the blows up.
I bottled it too soon, and it exploded.
Oh. Yeah, I had a roommate that blew up a, like a five-gallon beer thing in the kitchen.
Yeah, you got to be careful, man.
And think about things that blow up. They only happen between 1 a.m. and 5 a.m. in the morning.
Right, never, of course.
There's no noon blow. They're like earthquakes. Yeah, there's no noon blow-ups.
Yeah.
So he taught you how to make wine. Yeah. And he ran. Now, what would he do then? Would he? Did he have a souped-up car?
Yeah, they all did. And I was just telling Jordan this just a minute ago. My older brother said when he was growing up, none of the cars had a reverse in the transmission because the moonshine runners got bored of just racing each other, and so they only started racing in reverse. So they would just tear up. They just tear up the transmissions.
Wow.
Yeah.
So was your dad like sort of?
He was a great racer. He was just Like, he showed me a picture of him when he was a teenager, like the biggest thief in Fayetteville, Georgia. Like, he was that kind of guy. Then who at some point went to war.
A wheel man.
He went to war.
Second World War.
Hated it. And then he
Korean
came back.
War,
he came back on war. World War II.
He hated war?
He hated it?
Yeah. Because
is America.
Here's how he described it. All right. Country was totally divided. Blacks over here, whites over here. You go to war, everybody was fighting. I got your back, I got your back. The second the war was over, headed back on the ship back over here, it was, y'all stay over here, we'll be over here. He hated the whole thing.
I never understood the segregation as it pertained to the war because, and now I sort of feel the same with women wanting to get into combat. Like, I'm like, after you, my lady.
That's like, how I feel,
if I was in one of those Higgins ships that were crafts that were coming on to Normandy, I'd be like, where are the black folk? Get them up front.
Nobody tells me I can't be on the front lines. Wait.
That's what I mean. Like, I'll be with the in the rear with the gear and the white folk. Right. Well, let's think about this segregation.
I don't mind
business.
Cleaning your rifle, boss. Oh.
Yeah, I know it might sound horrible, but that's what I'm saying. Like, that's the one.
That's the good side of
that's
segregation.
That's the good side, yeah.
You're not good enough to die for your country.
I
agree, boss.
So then, now how do you get out of that place, Gary?
Out of Fayetteville?
Yeah.
I got out really because of a computer error put me in an acting class. Mm-hmm. But so, like, I grew up working in the fields, and we slaughtered our own hogs and chickens and shit like that.
How do you slaughter that hog?
The hogs, you shoot in the head first. Uh-huh. Then you cut their throat. You hang them upside down and cut their throat so they bleed out.
Mm-hmm.
You dip them in really hot water.
Don't you kind of
cut them straight down the middle?
Sounds so delicious.
Take the chitlins out and you sling the shit out of them. You wash them out.
Don't you kind of have a little relationship with those hogs by that time?
I am a vegan, man, because I've killed so much stuff. Like rabbits, we build the rabbit traps. And then you just pick them up by the back leg. And while they're squirming, you chop them behind the head with the back of your hand, it breaks their neck. It kills them instantly. So we did so much of that, like killing shit and shooting shit and chopping shit. It's like I got no taste for that. Wringing necks, you know.
Really?
But
see me.
In the apocalypse.
With hookers, it's just the opposite. Once I got a taste in my blood, now I'm doubling down.
And then when you fry them up, it's like, it's just delicious.
Nothing is an etouffee like a hooker is.
That ain't ranch I'm dipping in, baby. So as a young person, I would never figure this one out growing up in North Hollywood, but as a young person, you have these hogs, and you have names for them?
No, we never named our hogs. There was one hog that my daddy wouldn't eat because it did this weird thing of every time before it would eat, it would cross its hoofs and put it on the trough and put its head down so it looked like it was praying. And I remember my daddy going, Gary, come with me. He'd like, take your camera, because I would take pictures of all kinds of shit. Mm-hmm. Take camera this. And pour the slop in there, and the hog would do this thing that just looked like prayer. And he's like, I ain't eating that hog. Time to eat that hog, I ain't eating that hog.
That one
could
have been
Jesus.
Could
eat all the rest of them. Smart. He been eating Jesus' hog.
That might have been Jesus coming back to trick you.
I know you slop the hogs, too, but slop doesn't come in a sack from the store,
make your
right?
Own slop.
How do you make your own slop?
Well, my sisters all worked at I have six sisters, and they all worked at restaurants, the three older ones did.
Mm-hmm.
And so they could get all of the leftover food, because hogs will and can eat anything, including hookers, as we know. People do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so you take that, you let it soak in a big vat with water until it just starts. Basically, it starts kind of fermenting, and hogs just eat it. But the best day, the best day is when it's time to denut the hogs, because the males, you can't let them keep their testicles. If you do, the meat turns sour. And if they escape, they start growing these big boar tusks and stuff. So you have to get rid of the maleness of them so they get bigger and fatter.
Please tell me it's a rubber band.
Dude, no, sir. There's a dude and his skill.
Let me pull my balls
up. His skill is having real sharp knives. And he comes around once a year. My daddy calls him. You pay the guy. He brings out his knives. And it's literally getting up behind the hogs and just cutting their balls off. No anything else. And then they poured, I think it was mineral oil on it to keep it from.
How did
they not bleed out?
Because whatever they pour
they
on it.
They cauterize it with something.
No, they ain't cauterize it with shit. They
well,
pour
no,
like,
but they can do it with like gunpowder or something like that.
Pour,
they?
It was like something like mineral oil or
true,
something.
True, come
like
on.
That.
You're a doctor. No, there's shit you can dump on a wound that stops it from
but it
bleeding.
Wasn't
any, I have seen that in all those Vietnam movies.
Yeah, it wasn't anything like, oh, we have to go get the special. It was like mineral oil or something like that.
I'll tell you that. I would be a fan of this guy because later, like, let's just say the guy's name is Ray or something, whatever his name is.
Oh, the knife man?
Yeah. I would throw his name around later on when my kids became teenagers. You know, when I caught my son fucking his girlfriend or something. Don't make me get old Ray in here.
Old
Ray's got his knives right in the back of his truck. He'll be here right now. Dude. You hear me? Then I pump the shotgun and I yell, go on, get. By the way, you should yell get and then go on. But they do go on, get. Why? It should be get, go on.
You're right. Yeah. What is
that? Just like meet and greet should be greet and meet.
That's true.
Okay.
All right. Anyway.
Anyway.
Did your dad ever use that guy? Like, I'm going
to
go get
his own personal, just his personal life? To
I know.
The
threat obviously. Just a threat. Just a threat.
No, because like my dad had been to the Army, you know, and he had scars.
He was threatening enough.
I didn't ask him. I didn't ask him where he got scars.
Dad was scared. No.
I'm talking about the guy who cut the ball sacks off.
I'm just saying my daddy was scary enough on his own.
Oh, I get you. I get you.
He didn't have to threaten with other knives.
Other dudes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. With knives. Hey, your staff, you before these guys came in here, you talked about giving yourself a seasoned blowjob.
A seasoned blowjob?
Yeah, well, listen.
And the guys, Chris and Ray, Maxipata and Gary, want to know where you learned how to give seasoned blowjobs.
Wait a minute, what's a seasoned blowjob?
Well, that's what we were sort of talking about.
Like
what did you mean? No, he said if he could.
No, the Lari's taco. Stuff. I mean, I have said too much. You don't have to use Larry's taco.
You can never say too much about
no, a seasoned blowjob. No, what I'm saying is, here's what I'm saying. Somebody called in and they said, if I could go back and talk to the 19-year-old version of me, here's what I tell them. And I always think that because I led a life that was a lot of like picking up garbage on construction sites, cleaning garbage, doing a lot of stupid shit that I never should have done. But I didn't know any better, you know. But I would love to have this version of me go back and talk to the 19-year-old version of me. And so this guy brought that up. And then I queried this question. Would it be gay if you gave yourself a blowjob?
Oh, if the older you gave the younger you a blowjob.
A seasoned blowjob.
A seasoned blowjob.
Oh,
right,
I got you.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
I don't think that's gay.
That means you've done it before.
I have a time machine. I do it constantly.
But that's what these guys are asking. Where did you learn how to?
No, I don't
render
mean
a season.
Oh, that's right.
I don't. I just mean a guy who who's comfortable in his own skin with a little salt and pepper in around his temples. Who, speaking of seasoning, who understands. How to please a man.
What a man wants, yeah.
Yeah, what a man wants, what a man needs.
So I guess the Dr. Drew's question is, where did you learn to please a man to even go back and give a good blowjob to begin with?
I would argue that I could give a good massage if I got enough good massages.
Okay.
Powerful.
I don't know if that's true, though.
I don't know.
There's only one way to do it.
I guess my next question.
We
got
to build a time machine.
My question is then, do you feel like you haven't gotten enough good blowjobs in the past that you need to go back and make sure that your 19-year-old self at least gets one good blowjob for the rest of his life?
Because
now I'm concerned about the good blowjobs.
Yeah. Thank you. I just feel like at 19, I could have really used, a pep talk.
Yeah, sure. That's the peppiest talk of all.
That's the
thing you wish you knew at 19 was that 19-year-old girls are super easy.
Yeah.
That's what you wish you knew then.
Yeah.
But you were too scared to approach women at that age. And
also, it does – you know what sucks? And Drew, you weigh in here. But at age as a male, 19, 20, 21 – if you're out of college, especially, I mean, I didn't go to college.
You're out of
high school.
It's a low point.
You have nothing to do because it's unfair, really, because 27-year-olds are the ones that are banging the 19-year-old
right.
chicks, and the 19-year-olds want to be with that guy because he has a car and he's got a life.
Yep.
He's got a house. He's got whatever, apartment. He's got his own thing, career,
got
whatever.
A game.
You, as a 19-year-old male, do not get to bang other 19-year-olds because they're fucking 27-year-olds, and you don't get to go back to high school
right.
and fuck 16-year-olds. You're in this no man's land, and that's why I got to build a time machine and give myself a blowjob.
Wow.
It's simple math, mm-hmm. Drew.
Just encourage yourself.
You know,
a little TLC.
Maybe you should just go to high school and find a guy who looks like you did
right.
at 19 and help
and just
him
give
out.
Him a blowjob.
I just want you to help somebody.
Mm. All right, I'm going.
Just find
school.
Any 19-year-old guy and give him a blowjob.
Hello, Granada Hills.
Oh, Granada Hills, are they back in? North Hollywood's even closer. And then there's all the schools in Glendale.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just talked to a guy.
Dude.
Just me walking around.
Make sure he's at least 18 or older. Otherwise, it's
mm-hmm.
creepy.
Right. But me just walking through the halls. Can I help you? How tall are you?
Let's go to junior college.
What are you wearing? Are you wearing? Let's take your shoes off for a second. Just stand back to back for me for a second. This is interesting.
You missed the opening line. Are you cool?
You're not uptight, are you, dude? Good. Let me continue. All right, we got a couple of phone calls here to get to. I'm just pushing the top one. John, 37, married with two kids, Portland. What's up?
Oh, Adam, great to talk to you. Hey, Drew, I just want to say you guys are awesome dudes.
Say hi to Jordan and Gary Anthony as well.
Hey guys.
Hey, John.
Hey,
what's up?
So here's my situation. I've been married for 10 years. Got two kids, one three-year-old, one one-year-old. And my wife is tough, really tough. She has anxiety, OCD, you know, something like that, real germ-phobe.
Drew, what's wrong with everyone? Why is everyone going nuts now? Are we not?
Our shitty families, probably. We don't regulate. You're a product of that. You don't regulate your emotions normally because you don't get what you need when growing up.
Hold on. I'm not nuts.
I understand, but you complain
Everyone's
about.
Everyone's fucking nuts
no,
now.
No, I understand. It can go cut both ways.
No. I have a theory that Gary Anthony's mom didn't have time for nuts. She was too busy calling the guy to cut the nuts off and too busy making the slop and the meals for the 10 people. I feel like chicks especially now have too much time on their hands, and guys do too, and they're turning on
they
themselves.
Spin out, like dogs chewing on their legs.
Yeah, I really do. They're getting left alone with too much time in a computer, and everyone's freaking out, and then there's a new medication every 5 minutes to correct it. I feel like when people are up and working and moving and sweating, they just don't really have time for
Pioneers
that.
Didn't have OCD.
Yeah, it didn't make them happy, per se, but they were just didn't have
they were
time
too
for
busy.
That shit.
Busy trying to survive.
Well,
it's like peanut allergies,
I've said it a million times. Every guy I worked on a construction site with was not lactose intolerant, didn't have whey or wheat allergies. I would go on lunch runs, and they would eat whatever the fuck I brought them back, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
There was no dietary, hey, I don't do this, and I don't eat that, and this doesn't sit well with me. Why magically did none of those guys have any, but if there were a bunch of rich white kids sitting there who had nothing to do, there'd be a whole laundry list of shit that they couldn't eat or they didn't, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, it's like dry eye syndrome. It's like, wait, dry syndrome, you don't need you just blink.
Yeah.
Blink, bitch.
Put your head under the sink.
Yes. Bitch, blink. I'm not taking you to the doctor. Blink.
So, John?
Yeah, yeah.
Does your wife work?
She did, and she was like that when she worked. So that wasn't really the issue. She was extremely busy, and then we thought, well, maybe if she stopped working and took a little part-time gig, things would kind of mellow out. But it's really only gotten worse.
Well, you haven't really described what it is.
Well, she has anxiety around people, you know, outside of family, and she has major germ and chemical phobia, and just really can kind of turn on you and just just snap. You know, she'll be okay for maybe a week at a time, and all of a sudden it just goes really bad. And we have gone to, you know,
okay, listen, therapy. John, once again, you're not, you vaguely sort of tilt towards germ phobia and snapping. What are you describing?
What do you mean snap?
What does that mean?
Oh, just like screaming at me and, you know, calling me every name in the book over, you know, having dog food on the counter, something like that. You know, just being really hypersensitive about things.
All right. You know, Drew, really, can you fix it?
No, I mean, she sounds like she's being abusive. And how long did you go to couples counseling?
Over a year, yeah.
Once a week?
Once a week for over a year, and then we took a little time off.
Why?
Most of it, because we needed somebody to watch the kids, so it just logistically that's the way it worked out. And we're going back. We're planning to go back, but, you know, our couples counselor said that, you know, she addressed my wife and said, you know, you could probably benefit from some of these, you know, medications like this or that. But that's as far as it went.
All right. Well, that's what needs to be pursued then. If she needs a treatment, if her condition is adversely affecting your relationship and you're working on the relationship as best you can, then she needs to take some her the advice from the professional and go get proper care so the relationship can keep moving forward.
You know, I feel that couples counseling, there should be a female and a male, and you should sort of be like your advocate, you know, like where you got to go, listen, ladies, you need to take a chill pill. Let me explain how guys work here. I always feel like couples counseling is just one chick, and then it's your wife, and then you're talking, and before you know it, it just becomes 50 minutes of what you need to do to fix your own shit. You know what I'm saying?
It's just strange, Adam, how that would be directed towards you.
Yeah, why?
And then bringing a man in the room will just take care of that.
Just bring a dude in there that goes, listen now. Slow down, ladies. Let's get our panties out of a bunch here, and let's focus on the positive. I brought along this brochure.
You
may want to leaf through it.
You probably would never need therapy just from hearing that. So you got it. It seems like you got it figured out, Adam.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You're like, you got it good. Like, you know exactly what you need.
I'm on top of that game. No, Drew, what is that therapy I'm going to do?
EMDR.
How does that work?
What does that mean?
It's basically a rapid eye movement therapy. And so it's sort of plugging into that same mechanism that we have in our dreams that help us sort of reprocess information.
Mm-hmm.
Our sleep cycling, we have a rapid eye movement phase. It turns out that if you move your eyes in a certain way while you're thinking about and feeling emotions around trauma, you can get at that stuff in a different way.
Mm.
So it's a whole guided experience.
Drew, am I going to be able to get there? Because you know what's going to happen to me is I'm going to go in there and they're going to like just relax and look in this thing.
You're going to have some notes for them.
I'm going to be thinking, I smell white diamonds. That's the shittiest perfume I've ever smelled before. And then they'll be telling me what to do, but the whole time I'll be thinking about Liz Taylor.
Yes.
And then I'll start. Is that what's going to happen?
You're going to have some notes for them, I'm sure, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But my notes are to help improve.
Of course.
That's so all. While you're moving your eyes back and forth, they're telling they get you in that state.
Yeah,
and then
you go through some.
You're kind of in a suggestive state.
It's related to hypnosis. Yes.
Oh, okay.
It's related to. It's not. Same.
Okay. So shifty-eyed people, they always know what's going on.
They're always.
They're very comfortable.
You ever see those guys at the ping pong tournament? There's the most centered dudes on the planet, man. They're just fucking. Their core is centered. You can learn more about this, by the way, on episode 68 of the Dr. Drew podcast. And has it worked?
Cheryl Arrett is on there. She does this. And she's, in fact, I think who I've recommended for you to carry this out.
Yeah. What? Is she in Beverly Hills?
Yes.
Do they have a mobile van? You know, like dog groomers do?
She's on my HLN program all the time. Maybe you can meet her
there.
Get
in the van.
Hollywood.
Come on by the house. You know what I mean? Like, I don't get it. If a dog groomer, you know what I mean? Like, here's what I'm saying. You don't hire a gardener, and he goes, yeah, why don't you bring your lawn over around noon? He comes to you.
There's even food trucks now.
There's
they'll
food
come,
trucks.
Come to places.
And they got whole stoves and ovens.
Again,
and,
these are some of the notes you'll give her.
Right. Well, I'm saying she's just one.
So it's mobile therapy is what you're saying
mobile
you're looking
EMDR.
For. It sounds like a
EMDR
good business.
Wheels.
Can't you just get in a car and come to my place? That's what I'm saying. I'm more comfortable.
You'll pay more. You're willing to pay more. That's not even the issue.
I pay a premium.
Yeah. He didn't say that.
Andrew, is it true? I heard that men are more comfortable. Like if they're sitting side by side and you want to get a dude to open up, then why not just have her drive you around and talk to you while you do this shit? So you're sitting side by side.
Well,
I'm a doctor. I'm a medical doctor. Medicine.
Yeah.
I got ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Gary, that's not a true thing. That
and then at a certain point, I go, listen, I got a Best of Foghat CD. I just want to pop that in if that's cool. We're not going to turn it all the way up, but a little music.
Ride.
Let me tell you what guys like. We like to listen to Slow Ride and sit next to each other, not facing each other. And then at a certain point, it'd be, is that real wood in that dash? Is that real wood? What is this? 2011, 2013? Is this 7th?
This could be
this
could be a new way of getting guys
in the
get them in the car.
Teenagers especially.
That's right. Yeah. Get them in the car. Yeah. Drive by, pick them up. Mm-hmm. Not going anywhere. All right. Go down to the Dairy Queen, get a little soft swirl.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Well,
and then they can lie. Sure, the first one built.
They can all
build.
I guess they all could say that unless you saw them building a minion.
Let me give a little love to one of our fine sponsors, DraftKings, baby. DraftKings.com. Celebrating with millions in cash prizes. Fantasy football just around the corner. Everyone loves fantasy football. One day fantasy sports, you never get locked out of the season. You pick a team, your team loses or they win, doesn't matter. Next day, new team, new chances. Pick your team in minutes, play for your share of the $1 million they're awarding during kickoff this week, or I should say during kickoff week. That's coming up in a couple weeks. Anyone can enter and play for just a couple of bucks. True story, a guy won $100,000. Very first time out. Drew?
But you can play for free. Yes, free at DraftKings.com. If you enter Drew with your first pay game and get free entry into the $1 million kickoff bash, seriously, that is free entry that could win you thousands just playing fantasy football. Use Drew at DraftKings.com. Again, that is DraftKings.com.
All right. I want to tell people we're going to be in Newport, Rhode Island. And
tonight.
Me and Drew, tonight. So if you're hearing this, you can go out tonight, August 25th. And if you'd like to subscribe via the PayPal button, we'd much appreciate it. Gary Anthony Williams, Jordan Black, Blackout Television, the podcast, all African-American improv show available on iTunes and also the website blackouttelevision.com. Jordan, Gary, this has been a little slice of heaven, man.
Yeah, thanks,
thank
man.
You.
Hey, if people don't enjoy that podcast, we will come to
their house
and give any 19-year-old there a blowjob.
A seasoned blowjob.
Wow. Seasoned blowjob.
That's how they are.
Just tweet Gary.
Gary. You can tweet me at that one earlier or Gary A. Williams. It doesn't matter where you tweet me. I will. You tweet, I will tweet, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I'll tweet your meat. I'll tweet your meat.
All right, let's get that time machine built. Until next time, it's Adam Kroll for Gary Anthony Williams, Jordan Black, Dr. Drew, and me, and Chris Max Pata and Gary Haftard saying mahalo.
This is Corolla Digital.